Okay, just so you know, that's the first 10 seconds of the show. Right. I recorded the shit out of that.
Okay. Welcome to episode 17 of I'm Trying to Think. I am your host, Chuck Warner, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Dave Stern. Say hello, Dave.
Hello.
I'm Trying to Think is a podcast sponsored by the Foundation Institute. Check foundation-institute.org. And you can visit I'm Trying to Think on the web at imtryingtothink.com. And then you can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/I'm Trying to Think, and you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look for I'm Trying to Think on Facebook. I mean, seriously.
I like how every week you seem to just run out of gas at Facebook.
Facebook,
you run
is,
out of gas.
That's my limit there.
Yeah, I swear to God, if we add one more fucking thing, yeah. Like, because you're already just running out of gas on the Facebook thing. So at that certain point, you're just going to be like, you know, and add us on Twitter, and I'm trying to, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Add us on Twitter. Add us on Facebook. Just look for it. And fuck you, YouTube.
Like, yeah, maybe. That's, I don't know.
You just run out of gas real fast.
Before the song runs out, I'd like to at least admit, this is Love Barge by Big Dipper, our opening music this week. Band from Boston.
Yep.
Where you spent your whole last week this week.
Absolutely.
So I just felt that was a little bit topical, and then we could just get rid of that.
Yeah. It's very apropos. That band is from the very city in which I recently won a pub quiz.
That is apropos of something. You won a pub quiz? I didn't hear about this.
Yep. No.
That's big news.
Yeah, there's a buddy of mine who was in town, who had moved back into town that I was not aware of.
Oh, my.
We went to a pub quiz, and we kicked the shit out of it, because
did you win
we're fucking
dollars?
Nerds. No, we actually won money. It was cool.
Money?
Yeah, I made a profit. I had two beers and turned a profit. It was nice.
Two beers and turned a profit. We should look for, we should be pub quiz hustlers.
Yeah. I think
we could study up. I mean, we're pretty good at trivia.
Yeah, right? I would say we'd barely need to study, because in terms of who's going to win a pub quiz... Nerds is going to win a pub quiz.
Nerds is going to win a pub quiz, and nerds who do sports, which is you, going to win a pub quiz. I'm mm-hmm. I think I'm the more history buff.
Well, there were some history questions too. Actually, I mean,
saying you're bad at history, Dave.
I'm
take
just saying
it
one of the things that most impressed me that I pulled out of my ass was knowing that the things the French Revolution that what they changed the names of to like Thermidor and all that stuff was months of the calendar.
That's a good one. That
learned,
is a good one.
Learned that from a comic book.
It's really surprising how much I learned from comic books, or have learned from comic books in my life.
Especially sort of like willfully, like when you're sort of an advanced nerd and you're not just reading superhero stuff, you wind up reading sort of willfully, purposefully esoteric comic books.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
Like the whole Thermidor French Revolution thing, I picked that shit up from Sandman.
I'm not gonna. Yeah, Sandman. Actually, you're correct. Now I remember that. But I'm not gonna put down Marvel Comics and the X-Men. Yeah. They taught me a lot of things too.
Yeah, mostly about vibranium. Vibranium.
I know a lot about adamantium now, thanks to them.
And vibranium.
Vibranium is important. I'm not gonna lie.
Is Thor's hammer vibranium, or is it a different made-up metal? Is it like Uru?
Thornanium.
Thoranium.
Thormamio.
Thormania. No, Thormania.
The Dread Thormammu?
That's different. Thormania. Thormania is what happened in, 1963 when Thor performed on the Ed Sullivan Show, right?
Yeah.
Thormania swept the nation?
Yeah, the Nordic invasion. All right. So let's get the disappointment out of the way now.
Okay.
This week, due to technical difficulties.
I would say more logistical difficulties.
Technical difficulties.
Technologistical difficulties.
Technical. Difficile technical.
No. Los difficultes del logistical.
Dos sombreros. There
donde
will not be
esta la biblioteca.
A Chunky Mary review this week. We'll be doing that in episode
18. We've got the recipes. We need to have sort of time, and I need to be in town so we can round up all the ingredients.
Yeah.
Because naturally, you know, there's sort of... naturally, no one was convenient enough for an economy of scale to, you know, recommend the same spaghetti sauce or salsa
right.
or any goddamn
or hot
thing.
Hot sauce or anything else. You need like 40 of them. We're going to have to go collecting all over town.
Yeah.
It's like the worst WoW quest ever.
Yeah, we got to sort that all out. Because the reward for the quest is punishing yourself. It's like, congratulations, you have slain the evil griffin. Here is I kick in thy nuts.
Due to the due to the difficulty and the just the self-flagellation aspect of the quest, we won't be reviewing Chunky Mary's until next week. But I'll have to I'll be working that Saturday, so I'll come out of work and go straight into podcasting and drinking Chunky Mary's. So that will be horrible, probably.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I don't know what you'll be doing on Saturday working the weekend. Maybe it'll almost seem like a relief. But probably not.
No.
Let's be honest. Probably not.
Probably not. But, yeah, so that's the disappointment for this week. And I think now we can take a little break, let everybody sit on their disappointment.
Yeah, let that sink in. Let that sink in.
And then we'll go back to, I don't know.
Something. We'll talk about something.
Come back for another segment. So we will be right back with more of I'm Trying to Think. And welcome back to I'm Trying to Think episode 17. Hold on, I'm going to do a little mic adjustment there. Excellent. Oh, that was great. Okay. I'm Chuck Werner, and with me, as always, is Dave Stern. So, Dave.
Yeah?
You want to talk about some stuff that's happening with some things?
I sure do.
Why don't you go ahead and do that?
Okay. So, I'm going to start off. One thing I don't think I've talked about on the show, I may have casually mentioned to you offhand.
Like you do?
Yeah. Because, you know, we, this isn't just a professional relationship where we pound out this show and go away and just don't talk to each other because we've become disgusted with each other.
Wait,
that's not going to be at least until episode, like, 30.
All right.
At this point, we still talk out of
Yeah.
At this point, we still talk 30. Out of context of the show because we're friends, kind of.
Kind of.
Yeah. Rrr. Acquaintances. Acquaintances. I'm in your house a lot.
All right.
Okay. Anyhow. So, I've been trying to get back to reading more philosophy.
That's good.
Yeah. Because, you know, it's something I haven't done so much since, you know, I got out of school and it was not, you know, required of me to do so.
Yeah.
Well, and it seems like a good idea.
That's reasonable.
So, I've kind of started off, one, both because it seems to be an easy book, because it's more of a survey course kind of overview thing rather than like a deep philosophical text.
Right.
And because it's literally sort of the chronological beginning of Western philosophy.
Uh-huh.
So, I've started with kind of by taking a survey book, like a thin book of sort of the pre-Socratic philosophers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all those Greeks, basically for those who don't know, it's pretty much the Greeks who came before Socrates.
Greekies.
Yeah. And I put that book on the lid of my toilet.
Right, where it belongs.
Yeah, and I read it when I'm on the dumper.
Like you do.
Yeah. It's a kind of learning program I've implemented for myself. I call it Pre-Socratics While You Poop, and it's been pretty effective so far.
Good. yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
There's no need for me to comment.
No. I think that speaks for itself. But
it does.
Moving on. The thing in this morning's installment, what I got to reading was Zeno and Zeno's paradoxes.
Zeno's, he's a guy. His name begins with X.
Or Z, depending on your translation, transliteration. But
I like X.
It begins with one of your last couple alphabet letters, not Y.
You know who else?
Yino. No Yino.
You know who else's name begins with X?
Xerxes?
Zenu.
Also Xena, while we're talking about
She's the warrior princess. Do you think Zenu and Xena are related? Like, do you think Scientologists watch the warrior princess and get upset a little inside?
I think they get a little bit aroused.
Did she take everybody's souls and put them
in the,
or anybody's
in the throwing,
bodies and put them
in a
volcano and then throw the disc at it and it exploded?
I think so.
Like an H-bomb?
I believe that's their religion, yes.
I don't know. It's a crazy religion.
Yeah,
go ahead.
But moving on. So, I was reading about Zeno's paradoxes. And basically to give, I'll just give a quick overview of the Achilles. That's kind of the most well-known one.
All right.
Basically, again, just to give an overview of the paradoxes for people who don't know, basically what they are reductio ad absurdum arguments, and while I'm defining things, I'll just quickly say that is that kind of argument is when you assume something is true, make logical statements from that thing, come right. to a conclusion that's crazy, and then you're like, ha, therefore the original thing was not true. So Zeno's paradoxes are all reductio ad absurdum arguments against the concept of motion.
Yeah, he doesn't like motion. I don't know if he had a problem. I have a theory, but we'll get to that.
No, I can actually tell you why. Because, again, it's this whole... That would be from the lesson of the past couple of days, which was Parmenides while you poop.
All right.
It's because he was a student of Parmenides, and Parmenides' notion of basically the world as one unchanging thing means that motion doesn't really make sense in Parmenides' system.
Yeah, I don't know.
And Zeno's stuff, that's why he had kind of his hate on motion. That's why
Parmenides
he hated motion.
And Heraclitus, like, archenemies? What?
I like to think so.
Where does the Parmenides philosophy even come from? How do you observe the universe around you and come to the conclusion that nothing changes?
I don't know. You also have to come to the conclusion that the universe isn't like how it looks. Which he does.
Which he does, yes.
It's weird. But we digress. We're talking about the wrong Greek philosopher entirely.
Okay.
So Zeno, his student, is arguing against... Yeah, so Zena, his warrior princess student.
Right.
In between doing the, like... What'd she do? Did she do like a... Did she do some sort of crazy... Something like that. I don't know.
It's ululating.
Yeah. She ululates. She throws the discs. The chakra... Is it...
Chakram.
Chakram? Right. Chakra is
chakra
like...
Chakra or chakram.
No, she throws the chopra, right?
Chopra.
She throws the chopra.
Deepak Chopra.
Yes. Okay, so in between throwing Deepak Chopra around... Zena came up with the paradox. Paradox is arguing against motion.
Right.
The most famous one is called the Achilles, because the claim that it makes is you have a race between Achilles, the fastest of the Greeks, until you shoot him in his heel and he dies.
And he dies.
But that doesn't happen in this story. So.
Not in,
So it's, you know, a race between Achilles, the fastest of the Greeks, and a tortoise, the slowest of the Greeks, assuming it's a Greek tortoise.
Maybe it's slowest of the, you know...
Stuff. Yeah. The slowest of things.
Slowest of... Dudes.
Anyhow, according to the paradoxes, you know, since you have a little sympathy for the tortoise, because, you know, it's in a race with Achilles. That sucks for a tortoise.
He's not making a lot of progress.
Yeah. Now. You give the tortoise a little bit of a head start. Then, according to the paradox of Achilles, what Zeno claims is that, basically, so, that means, if the tortoise has a head start, that means Achilles has to travel to where the tortoise is.
Yes.
But in the time it takes Achilles to get there... The tortoise moved ahead a little bit.
Yeah.
So then Achilles has to go to where the tortoise is now.
Right.
But then in that time, tortoise moves ahead a little more.
Because that's what he does.
Yeah. So drawing from that, what Zeno says is that Achilles can never catch up to the tortoise, ever. He can get increasingly close, but never catch up.
Yep.
Now, in terms of how physics and mathematics have actually... solved this paradox, essentially, or resolved it, at least, resolved the tensions in it. There are more detailed and better arguments to give for someone who remembers anything about mathematics and physics, but since I'm not that person, I'm just going to wave my hands and say, Achilles is able to pass the tortoise because calculus happens. Yeah, you know, it's an infinite convergent series, calculus of some sort happens.
I don't know if... I think you could say that, but it's because, you know... As Achilles approaches the tortoise, the distance between them approaches zero.
Yeah, yeah.
But you don't really have to. You could just say, you know what, Zeno, warrior princess, you don't understand physics.
Which, in fairness, he didn't. It didn't exist yet.
Well, yeah, but you don't need Newton to tell you that something could pass something else.
Yeah, I mean, you can also say, look, that's what's happening. But then he
look
would...
Look at Achilles, he's passing the tortoise.
But then he would say, you know, but Parmenides, blah, 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 what you see is lie. And then he blows your mind.
But
that's how that goes.
I would ask Zeno if he was here today is first, how did you live so long? Give me your secret. Because I'm one of those people who says, immortality, give it to me.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? I'm not
and
one of those
if he was here
like,
today, that would be.
I was not, I'm not
like
one of those people who's like, I'd get bored. Oh, I'd want to commit suicide. No, I would not. I'm fine.
You know, and also maybe forever. You would, but I can deal with that problem when it gets there.
Yeah,
that's still, I feel like there'd be a couple hundred years of interesting stuff to do.
Yeah, let's handle that problem.
But anyhow,
when it comes.
Going back to that.
Going back to.
So now that we've.
Zeno, wait, Zeno's here and I'm talking to him.
Yeah, okay,
and
Zeno.
I'm like, Zeno.
How'd you do it?
Let me ask you another different question.
Uh huh.
So you observe, we observe the race and we see the tortoise run and give, he gets a head start and then. What we see is Achilles passing him. How do we know that Achilles wasn't always ahead of him and that the tortoise was trying to catch up to Achilles?
Yeah, I don't know if
how,
you have
how
an
do
answer
you even,
for that.
The basic idea here is, how do you even establish that there are distances between the two if you deny the, you know, evidence of observation?
Because honestly, I don't think... Because I think the secret for Zeno there, Zeno, Zena,
you know,
I know, Zeni.
Secret for Zena.
Is there a Zeni?
Ziti?
Can we go
Ziti
to Ziti?
Ziti is tasty.
Okay, so the secret of baked Ziti here is that I think what he would say is, you know, well, I'm not trying to establish that there is distance. What I'm trying to establish is that this world of motion and distance and difference and things not being the Parmenidean one is wrong. So he would say, I think... that you agree with him in a certain way. And then you would be like, oh, you, and shake your fist at him. But he would win because he's a good rhetor. It's all about
think,
the rhetoric.
I don't know that he would win.
I don't know. But anyhow, I think the main thing that I drew from this is...
that the pre-Socratics were on crack?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we haven't even talked about Pythagoras, or as I like to call him, basically insane Greek math Buddha. That's the topic for his whole... That's a whole other topic.
We'll cover that on the Pythagorean episode, which will, of course, be episode The Square Root of Two.
Awesome. Awesome. Don't eat beans. Don't have sex.
Yeah.
Also, the world is literally made of numbers.
Yeah. If you don't get the Square Root of Two joke, you're out of luck. We're not going to explain that one.
No, no. We have define a lot, but, you know, you have to keep up a little bit.
You got to keep up.
Okay, but anyhow, what the... Zeno thing, see, I took a brief pause to make sure I was giving it the right vowel at the end, because that could have gone. But anyhow, what that made me think about is, essentially, I was, you know, at least somewhat familiar with the paradoxes before reading this thing.
Right.
I know how they get resolved in, you know, a general way enough that I'm satisfied that, you know, those paradoxes are fine, you know, I'm not worried about them.
Okay.
But
it's
after
good
I...
It's for you not to worry about paradoxes. I don't want you to stay
you know,
up late.
I'm just going
to
say... I believe in motion. I do think that distance equals rate times time.
Good,
you
good
know?
For you, Dave. It takes a brave man to step forward.
And declare what he believes.
Yeah.
But regardless of all of that, I read the paradox again. And my mind was blown a little bit. I was like, wait, oh my God. I kind of start calculating it out. And I'm like, wait, he's right. And it takes me like 2 minutes before I'm like, wait a minute. No, he's not right. Motion still exists. But every time I read it, it still gets me. And that, I think, is impressive. It's weird that a math problem would do that, you know what I mean? Or a math kind of logic thing.
See, it doesn't get me at all. I just think, like, for some reason my brain is like, okay, so and now he's gotten closer to the tortoise. And then he takes a step, and it's past the tortoise. And it's over. I mean, how dumb do you have to be to... believe in the Parmenidean one, which doesn't get you anywhere in life.
Yeah, see...
It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't help anything.
What you're doing there, I think, is you're just sort of holding... You're not... Instead of sort of disappearing into the world
no.
of the paradox the way I do...
No!
You're just like, no, I will hold fast to my reasonable empiricism.
Yeah, and
which is where I get back to in a minute.
Yeah, because you want
to... But for that minute,
no,
my mind is blown. My mind is blown
yeah.
for that minute.
But let's also talk about this. What you were kind of hinting at earlier, that sometimes thinking about things ruins them or makes them less fun.
It's true.
I don't think so.
I don't know. I think thinking about this makes it more fun. Like,
yeah.
I like that minute where my mind is blown before I reestablish that, no.
See, I can't even enter that world. I can't even have my mind blown by Zeno's paradox. Just doesn't do it for me.
That's fair. I think another sort of weird mathematical thing that blows my mind that way is the Monty Hall problem.
Yes, which we discussed earlier as well. The Monty Hall problem, for those of you who don't know, there's if you haven't seen the show,
Let's make a deal.
Let's make a deal.
The old thing, not the thing with, like, Howie Mandel.
I don't know, but...
I don't know, he's bald.
You gotta see the old episodes, and you gotta see Monty Hall, who was the host. Great host.
A-plus, he's one of those classic old game show, like...
Exactly.
Gene Rayburn, Bob Barker, just real professionals.
Yeah.
In bad suits.
Men of the tiny bad microphone. Suits. As I like to call them.
Appalling colored suits. I think the only... You know,
let's make a deal.
I just want to give brief props, actually, to... NBA sideline reporter for TNT, Craig Sager.
Okay.
Because he is the one man on television who has kept alive the noble sort of game show host tradition of, like, pants-shittingly horrible suits.
Does he have a tiny microphone?
He does not have a tiny microphone.
Then my
But I'm just going to say powder blue suits, pink suits.
Then like, I have to say, friend, I am not interested.
Eye-melting plaids, like... He does good work with bad suits.
Monty Python celebrated their 40th anniversary.
Indeed, and they are a delightful sketch comedy group.
Let's give them a round of applause.
Funny fellas.
Okay.
You should check them out if you haven't heard
of them. Monty Hall,
different
guy.
That's our secret recommendation to you.
Yeah. Monty Hall, different guy.
We're hipping you to that.
Hipping people to Monty Python. Good job. Monty Hall. I could actually do it. We'll talk about Monty Python a little bit later, because there's something they say that... about their comedy that is the opposite of how I approach this show.
Uh-huh.
Which is... Well, we can discuss that later, though. Monty Hall, at a point in Let's Make a Deal, there would be three doors. Behind two doors would be a gag prize.
Yeah. Do you want what's behind? Door number one.
Right. That's where the door number
two.
One, exactly.
Or door number three.
Often there was a goat behind one of them. You know, crappy, like, broken... down old
car, jalopies,
cars, refrigerators.
Jalopy.
Yeah, jalopies, things like that.
Come on.
And behind one would be a great prize. And here's the Monty Hall dilemma, if you will. Monty Hall would ask you to pick a door. Then he would reveal what was behind a different door. And it was always the gag prize that was revealed.
Well, one of the gag prizes.
One of the two gag prizes, right. Then he would say, do you want to switch your answer, or do you want to switch your choice with the other door? I mean,
yeah.
I don't
know. Do
you
want the door you originally picked, or do you want to switch to the other current door?
We're entering the world of hypotheticals. This is a hypothetical situation on the show. I think the show was run different ways at different times.
Yeah, I think it had varying games, blah, blah, blah. But this is sort of the canonical math problem version of this.
What the goofy part is that it is always in your best interest, statistically, to switch after being shown one of the gag prizes.
100%. Well, I mean, it won't work 100% of the time, but it is always this
always
better statistical
better, right.
thing to switch.
Which goofs you up because you think, well, if he's eliminated one of the bad things, one of the two is still good. It's 50-50 shot.
Yeah. But no.
But no. That is not how math works, my friends. Math works against you at all times and hates your guts.
Yes, math is basically a sinister force working in our lives. Like, basically, you know how fundamentalists think about Satan? That's how math is.
Right.
It's lurking around every corner, trying to tempt you, along with its evil cousin, psychology.
Now, here's the truth behind the Monty Hall problem, if I could explain it quickly.
Feel free.
All right. It is that, you have a two-thirds chance of picking one of the gag prizes. Two out of three times, your choice is going to be a gag prize.
Yeah, because in the first round, there are three doors.
Right.
So you have a...
One out of those three choices is going to be the car. In the case where you choose the car, a gag prize is revealed. Now, let's say we're going with the strategy, always switch. In this case, one gag prize is revealed... You don't know that you've chosen the car. When you switch to the gag prize, you don't get the car. That happens one third of the time. Sad. I know.
Yeah. And you feel a little bit extra dumb because you actively switched from.
Right.
But statistics don't care about your stupid emotions.
Right. In the other two cases, you have picked a gag prize. The other gag prize is revealed, meaning it's been eliminated from your choosings. In both of those cases, when you switch to the car. So if you just look at it this way, two-thirds of the time, in two-thirds of the cases, when you switch, you're going to get the car. And one third, you're going to get a goat. Or a jalopy.
Yep. So, even though it seems like it's even odds and everything is irrelevant, it's not. Right. See, and I remember the first time in my life I had this explained to me was in my 10th grade math class.
Yeah. Well, actually, I
want to... And it blew my mind then.
And I want to kind of go over the other...
But I will say, having internalized it, even after that, you know, I've kind of heard it enough times that I'd sort of internalized it, so I knew what the right answer is. But even still, hearing the explanation is kind of cool. I'm just like, oh, wow, and if that's why it is. It's neat.
If you never
switch...
Which
means I'm a giant nerd.
Right.
Because I find math and statistics that interesting.
Let's take the opposite strategy and show why it doesn't work. If you never switch, one third of the time you still pick the car. You never switch, you get the car. Two thirds of the time you pick a gag prize. You don't switch, you get a gag prize. It's very clear that always switching gives you...
The two-thirds chance.
Basically, yeah. The two-thirds chance versus the one-third chance. A 33% extra chance, or improved chance.
And that ain't too shabby, folks.
That is not too shabby. So, math will play some fucking tricks on you.
Oh, yeah.
Math is tricksy.
Yep. Math is... Yeah.
Mostly statistics, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Most math is fine. 2 plus 2... That doesn't get tricky with you
too much.
2 plus 2
pretty much stays at 4.
You're set,
yeah. That's a solid axiom.
It's when you try to think, when we try to consider, we are so bad at considering statistics. So bad at it.
Oh my God, yes.
One of the worst places where we are bad at statistics is binomial theorem, which I've just lost everyone right there. But
bring us back.
Follow me for a moment. Binomial theorem. It's part of, it's algebra, but it's really about statistics.
Yeah, because that's the thing about most statistical theories that would help someone immeasurably to know, is they're not the crazy complicated math ones.
Right.
Most of them are just pretty simple algebra equations that we just don't know because we don't know them.
Right.
And they're sort of confusing in your brain, but they're not confusing as math.
The kicker, binomial theorem is about, all right, so you know something has a chance of happening. For instance, rolling a die, you have a six-sided die, you have a 1 in 6 chance of getting a
number,
1.
Yeah.
Each time you roll the die, it doesn't matter what you rolled last time. That will not affect the outcome of the next event.
They are independent events.
Independent events. And when we take them over time, we begin to have illusions about how our chances even out. For instance, if the chance is 1 in 6 of rolling a 1.
Right.
And I give you 6 rolls, what are the chances that we get at least 1 1? It seems like 100%.
Yeah, but I believe... Am I correct in... I'm trying to connect these two things. I don't remember if this is precisely it or if it's slightly different, but basically, misunderstanding the binomial theorem is the gambler's fallacy. Is that correct?
It's pretty similar. The gambler's fallacy is actually different. The gambler's fallacy... Slightly. The gambler's fallacy is belief that previous events influence future ones. In other words, you could take a perfectly sensible person who knows that each roll of die is independent, but they think that it's kind of additive, you know. Oh, well, there's 6 rolls, so it's, you know, pretty good chance that 1 is going to appear
right
over those 6 rolls. It's got to be close to 100, right? That's what they think. They
right.
think it's got to be near 100. Whereas a gambler's fallacy is more like, it's a 6 has got to be rolled eventually, right? I've rolled these dice 100 times and I've not seen a 6, but it's got to come up eventually, so I'll just keep rolling.
Right. So they're kind of they're in the same neighborhood.
But the fact of the matter is, the probability of getting a 1. On 6 rolls of a die, of a 6-sided die, is in the neighborhood of 70%. At least 1-1. Of course, you could roll.
Right, yeah. Right.
It's only 70% chance that you get at least 1-1 over 6 rolls.
Yep. Again, when you crunch, if you do crunch the numbers, makes sense. But if you sort of crunch the numbers half-assedly in your brain, yeah, that's not what you're going to get.
Crunching the numbers is a terrible idea, because also the binomial calculations are really annoying.
Annoying, yeah.
Go find yourself a binomial calculator. The web is full of them. But what the kicker is something like, I play World of Warcraft. Let's talk about World of Warcraft again.
Go for it.
Because we got to. So I'm trying to get something. I do this thing every day. It has a 1% chance of dropping this mount that I want, right?
Right, right.
And I'm like, I've done this 70 times. Now. And it has not dropped for me.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm a huge nerd.
Oh, my God.
So... Okay, go ahead. Shit. Yeah, keep going. All right.
No, that's enough.
You done?
Yeah, my point is made.
So I was thinking, well, as I approach 100 trials, my chances, should be improving.
Surely.
And they're just not. I don't even think...
Do they literally not improve? They just improve at a vastly slower rate than you would like
them
to.
That's the problem. They get slower. Basically, the chance of me getting the mount after trial 70 versus trial 71.
Not much
of a difference. And that difference keeps going down.
You want it to be a 1% increase and a straight line.
It's not.
No, sir, my friend.
After 70 trials, it's actually, or after 70 trials, I forget where it's at. But after 100 trials, again, it's about 74%. Of a 1% chance on 100 trials. So it's still not that great. it's not a sure thing. There is no such thing as a sure thing.
Nope.
You could stretch this number out as huge as you want. Mm-hmm. There's still not a 100% chance that you'll ever see it.
All right. So I think if there's a couple things we've figured out, if you allow me to sum up our mathematical insight from this segment, it's the things you think are probably wrong. Numbers are lying to you. Statistics are tricky. Read a book. Think about it.
Okay.
That's basically where we're at? All right. Lovely.
I think you've kind of deflated it, but... All right.
Yeah. Did I?
But we're talking...
I thought it was a forceful summary. Did you think I just took the air out?
I just feel a little deflated. Maybe it's me, though.
Maybe you're just getting a little logy. You want to just take a break and then come back to this?
I want to talk about something.
Okay, you want to keep going?
A break.
All right, here. Then. All right, then, Mr. Deflatey. Let's chat, Mr. Deflatey.
One.
Deflator mouse.
Thinking about things ruins the fun of them.
Depends on the thing.
Does not depend on the thing. It should be fun to know the truth about things. If you are not having fun knowing the truth about things, I would say your psychology is gerfucked.
I don't know, because sometimes the truth is painful and strange.
And it doesn't matter. So what? The lie is comfortable and, well, I'm just going to go to bed tonight. Tomorrow when I wake up, I'll lie to myself that I'm at work, and we'll see where that gets me.
You'll probably have a lot more fun.
I will, for a very short amount of time. The point is that you have to operate on facts. You have to operate on knowledge. Like, I would, it's fun to believe in crap that has no basis in reality. For instance, the Discovery Channel is now doing a show about ghosts. And they're getting...
Ghosts!
They're using, technology and shit to have these people who are huge con artists...
Okay, question.
Find ghosts, quote-unquote.
Are there backpacks?
No. They're like PKs.
Do they not even have a trap?
No, I don't think they have a trap.
Well, then what's the fucking point?
They're not interested in trapping. They're interested only in... Basically, they're interested in...
Who are you going to call?
Hey, look at
ghost
this thing.
Looker
I got
matters?
This thingy that will show heat signatures or some other bullshit and show you, ooh, look, there's the lights flickered. It's
what?
Just
F that,
fucking
man.
Bullshit.
Man, when there's something weird in my neighborhood, I don't want to call ghost look atters.
Well, that's what you're getting.
God damn
see,
it.
The
real world lags disappointingly
since
behind.
Since the Ray Parker Jr. years...
The halcyon days.
The halcyon days of the ghost busting. Sympathy for the ghost has increased 1,000-fold.
Oh, so now it's like, is it sort of the ghost busting versus ghost watching thing? Is it the same way that, whaling is now mostly whale watching.
Yeah, exactly. There's sympathy for the ghosts in question, which woo-hoo! Don't exist, you know. So woo-hoo! You can get that douchebag, John Edwards. No, John Edwards. Is it John Edwards for both of them?
I think it's another John Edwards. Yeah, both John the Edwards. Politician and the Speaks with the Dead guy.
Yeah,
or John Edwards.
And they're both kind of douchebags. But
yeah.
You get douchebag John Edwards up there telling people he's talking to their dead relatives, and then there's sympathy.
Yeah, you know what would make that show? You know,
ghosts are dangerous.
I was going to say, you know,
B, ghosts don't exist.
Yeah, you know,
those are the two facts.
Yeah, you know what would make that show much better?
What?
John Edwards busted your dead relatives.
Exactly. He's like, I'm getting a C. Do you have anybody name begins with C? It's a C name. I'm going to throw the trap down now, and you can deal with them later. You know, they're going to be in the tank, in the basement.
That's a show I can believe
that's
in.
That's a show. There's a show. And
believe in might be strong, yeah, but that's a show I can watch.
You support, right?
Yeah.
Believe in is completely the opposite of what is true. and, you know, people who don't understand cold reading or just bullshitting in general, you don't even have to be... Like, you don't even have to know the business of faking people into believing that they're a ghost. All you have to know is the business of faking people.
Yeah, yeah. Then like, the subject is ancillary to the faking.
It is. So you want people to believe there's a ghost in the house. You first induce the belief in them that there is a ghost in the house. That's the easiest part, is you convince them that there is a ghost in the house, external to any evidence. Then everything that occurs
becomes evidence they want it to be evidence. Yeah.
Exactly. It's the mind is horrible. Let's be honest. The brain is terrible.
Yeah, it's patchwork of basically the brain was originally designed as a machine to allow us, like, you know, to breathe, basic sort of limbic and motor functions. And then this whole thinking thing,
yeah, just got
was just sort of stitched in as a last minute project.
On. If you believe in intelligent design, the dude was not planning us for thinking. That's for damn sure.
Mm-hmm.
But let me get angry for a second here, okay?
Anger away.
The Discovery Channel is a place for science or stuff that's close to it,
or just pretty pictures of the world.
Right. The MythBusters, it's close to science. I'm going to give
they're science-esque.
They're science-ish.
They teach you what the scientific method kind of looks like.
Do not feed me bullshit that you're going to show me science of ghosts. Because I'll tell you what the science of ghosts is. There ain't no such thing.
I certainly ain't afraid of them.
Yeah, exactly. I ain't afraid of them. Every scientific study, every piece of research that is peer-reviewed and otherwise given credence has never shown a lick of evidence to believe in anything of the sort. Anger.
And that Dave. Concludes the official I'm Trying to Think Chuck Hates Ghosts Minutes.
True. Let's not stop. I hate ghosts, ghouls, goblins, unicorns, fairies, leprechauns. Take your pick.
You know, at this point you sound less of like a man of science and more just like a racist.
I'm racist against leprechauns, I can tell you that much. All right, and before we go into break, I'm going to cool down for a second here.
Ease up. Ease on down the road, much like ghosts. Characters in The Wiz.
Oh, I'm like Scooby-Doo, though, in the original series. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, no, ghosts. Fuck that shit. Let me pull the mask off. I'll show you who these motherfuckers are.
And
I could talk about a correlator.
Also, I'm just going to say, you do love a giant sandwich.
Oh, man. So, the thing is Scooby-Doo, best skeptic television drama ever. Only, pretty much, skeptic right. television drama ever. Even, I mean, like, skepticism is so undervalued in fiction of all kinds.
The skepticism in television fiction mostly is for the guy who gets knocked down a peg. You
exactly.
know? No, Scully in the X-Files, Jack on Lost.
Scully in the X-Files is what I really want to talk about.
Yeah, but also the same thing happened to Jack on Lost.
Jack on Lost gets screwed all the time. But Jack on Lost, the thing about Lost is it's really a show about about being introduced to a world of that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And it's about dealing with that world. It's not true.
It's not as directly
it's not
dealing
as
with like the skeptic versus
right.
believer thing.
Right.
But you know, they still have, you know, man of science versus man of faith, and you know, but man of science takes it in the bumhole. Let's be honest.
He does. And it's the thing is what I like about Lost as opposed to the X-Files is that it's more about Jack's stubbornness in the face of what a skeptic would consider
still
evidence.
Yes. Right.
So, and whereas in the X-Files, it was really just about how Scully was wrong. Like, everything she thought was wrong.
Pretty much.
Every conclusion she drew was wrong. And she just got reamed for the whole show. Whereas Jack is still strong, probably the strongest character in the show, despite what his weakness is, which is stubbornness. And I mean, that's what his character's really about. Stubbornness, not about right or wrong. But X-Files was about right or wrong, and it was about Scully being wrong about everything. That's bullshit. You got, let's see.
And that's why Scooby-Doo, like, if we're looping back to that, that's why Scooby-Doo was, because that's the show where skepticism was right.
It was rewarded.
Although,
and
you know what's...
Bullshit was always bullshit.
Sort of disappointing, but also kind of heartening, is, have you seen, because I've mostly seen them with the sound off when I'm working out, the new Scooby-Doo movies.
Yeah, there are real ghosts to them and shit.
No, but, because that's, the 13 ghosts of Scooby-Doo was just straight up ruining there are real ghosts.
It was, yeah.
But the new movies, what they try to do, it's this weird combination of having it both ways.
Yeah.
Where, because there's still a guy, there's still always a guy faking something at the end.
Yeah.
But he's doing it in real implausible ways. Like, instead of just being a guy in a mask scaring people with a light that goes on and off.
Yeah. Holograms.
It's always like.
Record players.
Well, jinkies. It turns out that, you know, Mr. Edison controlled a giant robot that he built himself.
Or was a warlock.
Yeah,
but also
had an amulet.
Made it. Yeah, had a magic amulet. But also made a costume, you know, on top of the magic amulet.
Yeah, so they're really trying to have it both ways.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, this isn't in the face of the supernatural, but skepticism on, like, Law and Order shows is good, at least. Where they don't believe the first explanation every time. That's good.
Oh, yeah.
That's still encouragement of the skeptic view. You know? And I'm not like a religious skeptic, and there are some people who are. I'm not like, like utterly
dogmatic.
Dogmatically devoted to skepticism. I just want people to think twice
before healthy skepticism,
right? Before they believe something. Really, I would prefer it if you just didn't believe anything. I think that's really the way to go about things. Mm-hmm. Just act on evidence and don't believe. Believe is
so.
It's a
don't
it, belief.
Wait, hold on.
Belief.
A question.
If I can just
Chuck.
I'm going to extol some virtues.
Okay,
here.
Extol some virtues, then
I
have a question for you. I don't know.
But belief is like an egomaniacal layer added to the top of evidence and fact, and the fact that we have logical brains. And that's about people who say, for instance, just fiercely believe what is in front of them, which I don't really do either.
Well, I mean,
on the
it's
other
just
hand,
there.
It can also just be an egomaniacal layer on top of
nothing.
Nothing. Like,
on
just
top of
funny
air.
Ideas.
Yeah. Although,
either way, though, belief, I think, is an exercise of the ego, which should be
minimized.
Casually sliced off.
Minimized, if not eliminated entirely.
Right.
Okay, one question for you, though. The hype.
The hype.
Should I believe the hype?
This is a tough question. Because the hype, often, there's a lot of money rolled into the hype. But money is not a sign of truth or falsehood. You should not believe the hype unless you have sufficient evidence.
All right.
Yeah.
I think that takes us to where we need to be.
Yeah. Let me. I'm going to make the Monty Python point real quick here.
Okay.
And then we'll
shoehorn
take a break.
Shoehorn it right in.
Shoehorned right in here, but I don't have anywhere else to put it. Monty Python has repeatedly. In interviews, especially John Cleese and Terry Gilliam and Terry Jones.
Yeah, so especially
Jones,
half
yeah,
of
Terry
them.
Jones. Yeah, basically half of them have said... Actually, I think Eric Idle, I've seen him say.
Okay,
it,
so, essentially, so
essentially
most
all
of them.
Yeah. Have said, you know, for them it was about making each other laugh. It was about making the group laugh. And that's how And that's all they cared about, you know?
Right.
And it just worked. Okay.
Yeah, because it's just trying to impress each other. Like, I think I've heard similar things about the state.
That's not my method.
I think there are a lot of groups
that's not my method.
That's not really how we work.
That's not how I work at all. Because I'm going to tell you, in order to make me laugh, for me to think something is funny, it's Bad News Bears. I mean, you got to go over the top. There's got to be circuses involved.
Yeah,
it's got to be utterly ridiculous.
You're a jaded man, comically.
Comically, I'm extremely jaded. The thing is the other side of me is that I laugh at pretty much everything because I find it all hilariously ridiculous. But to make me really just lose it, something has to be pretty crazy. For me to try and creatively use that as a fuel
would mean
everything's funny, so you're just getting whatever shit I throw out there, which is kind of how we do the show.
Yeah, that sounds familiar. That sounds real familiar.
B, no, we're going over the top. The show's not going to make any sense to anybody. We're just going from ridiculous thing to try and make me laugh.
Yeah, that also sounds familiar.
Okay, so maybe this show, like, maybe I'm trying to think, does kind of go by the Monty Python method. But if I were to be hired for, like, a TV sitcom,
you would not use yourself as a barometer.
No, I couldn't use myself. There are, like, three sitcoms that ever made me laugh.
You just have to ask yourself, what plays in Peoria?
Exactly. What, you know, what
will they like it in Dubuque?
Yeah, what did they do on Everybody Loves Raymond and just regurgitate it?
What didn't they do?
Yeah, what happened on Cheers, regurgitate it. Although Cheers was funny.
Yeah.
Cheers was funny. But, I mean, aside from writing a new Arrested Development, aside from, you know, revisiting Seinfeld, for me, it has to be far out there. It has to be Seinfeldian. It has to be, you know, Curb Your Enthusiasm for me to really just bowl over laughing. And those shows make me do it. And see there, I shoehorned that in.
All right.
Welcome to the Shoehorn Factory. You're on the Shoehorn Factory! Shoehorn it in! Come on! You're wasting my time, you pinhead. I'm going to cut your mic, shoehorn it in.
I think the first Boston album is overrated. Overrated. Ooh. Overrated.
Yeah, that actually hurts me where I live. Well, where you live. Anyways, we'll be right back.
Spaceship cover's kind of neat, though.
Yeah, it is. I like that. We'll be back with more I'm Trying to Think. I'm Trying to Think is a podcast sponsored by the Foundation Institute. The Foundation Institute would like to remind you that episodes of I'm Trying to Think are independent events whose quality is not predicted by the quality of previous episodes. The Foundation Institute, planning for the future and tomorrow. And welcome back to episode 17 of I'm Trying to Think. Dave!
Yeah.
That's a cut, wrap, print there.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good episode.
I want to come back to something you alluded at, I think, because you alluded to earlier about just thinking too much about things ruining them.
Okay.
Because, right, I'll tell you, this was actually in the car as I was going to shop for, you know, you and I were watching some football today. And
we did.
I came with some cookies and I came with a bag of ice for the cooler.
Yes, football, you know, because I contribute. Contributing is powerful.
And
math is power.
Yeah. No, it's great to learn because knowledge is power, which is actually where I'm going because that's, you know, part of the jingle for Schoolhouse Rock.
All right.
And in the car, one of the songs I listened to was the song Three is a Magic Number.
You know, as performed by...
This was a cover performed by Mike Doty.
Love Mike Doty.
And I finally thought about the lyrics more than I have. And basically, it's just a mishmash of inappropriate imagery and tautology. Like, I thought way too much, and I just ruined this sort of simple pop song, which, to its credit, helped me learn my times tables.
All right, but...
Like, I mean, you know, it starts off, you know, talks about the ancient mystic trinity. Two problems with that. One, I don't think that's appropriate. I mean, I just let kids learn times tables. You know, they don't need to be indoctrinated in, you know, Christian Trinitarianism. And two, that is the first Two, I mean, one, well, you can
I would say Trinitarianism is not ancient.
It's relatively
ancient. While it is mystic, I wouldn't say it's ancient.
Okay, so they're not cool. And then two, basically saying that three is in the Trinity is the first of the many things in this song that are just tautologies.
Yes.
Which I don't think, I'm not sure how pedagogically useful that is.
You used two big words there, tautology. A tautology is a statement which proves itself, or which is definitive of itself. A equals A is tautological. Police sirens are not tautological.
No, but they are in the background.
That happens. Yeah. So, tautology, like water is wet.
Exactly.
Tautological.
So, you know, basically three is the Trinity. And then in the same song it talks, you know, tripod has three legs. A tricycle has three wheels. Mm. Those are kind of tautological. A triangle has three corners and three sides. Also tautological. That song is just tautology after tautology.
All right.
I don't know the use of it.
Yeah. Triangles have three angles. Every triangle has three corners. Sorry.
Triangle has three sides.
Every triangle has three sides.
No more, no less.
Every rectangle has four corners. Every rectangle has four sides. Who cares? What's your fucking point?
Yeah. It's
every pentagon has five corners. Has five sides.
There you
sides.
Go. Me thinking about it has ruined
I don't think it's ruined, though. So I don't know. It's a stupid song.
But I will say, you know what? It's still a good pop song.
Yeah.
And it's still, by having the just part in the end where it recites 369, et cetera, et cetera, it does help me learn my timestamps.
On the Mike Doty train, though, have you really thought about the lyrics to Bust to Beelzebub?
No.
Yeah.
Because they're just words that sound nice together.
He's a silly writing man sometimes. And I like it, so whatever.
Yeah, but anyhow, I will say one point that I wanted to make is...
Oh, wait, Dave.
Yeah?
It takes three legs to make a tripod.
Yeah.
By the way, just...
Yeah, because it's a tripod. No fucking shit.
Or to make a table stand.
Okay, that's reasonable.
Actually, there's 2 points I'd like to make about that. Yeah, yes, you can make a balancing table with three legs.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily untrue that you can't make one with two.
No, I think at that point it's probably, they're either not legs, it's like a slab.
Yeah, it's like a big thing. Well, what's a leg, brother?
Well, in that case, it's just a giant bench.
Let's go ontological on the table. Let's do it.
Fine.
No.
No, okay. But I will say, I think at that point, your table's actually just a giant bench.
And it takes three wheels to make a vehicle called a tricycle.
Okay. Yeah. True, but tautological. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, sure. It takes two to make a bicycle. Whoop-de-doo.
Yeah. But anyhow.
If you wanted to make a quadricycle, you could have a party.
Uh-huh. One thing I want to say.
Like a quadricycle.
Yeah. That would be fun. But anyhow, I will say, in terms of learning my times tables as a kid, a bit of an autodidact. I was taught by two videotapes, essentially. Right. One of those videotapes was the Schoolhouse Rock multiplication videotape, which, you know, included this song as well as, you know, basically their songs about the other, you know, first nine numbers.
Mm-hmm.
The second video, which I was taught, was called Hip Hop Multiplication. And it was basically early 90s children directed hip hop with the sort of like bad Casio beats and production that implies.
Yeah.
And also the point where people didn't quite get, certainly, you know, educational video makers didn't quite get what hip hop was and how it works.
So you're saying it's like a mathematical cha cha slide?
Yes. Yes.
The cha-cha slide could teach you how to count, too.
Does it? It has a little counting in it, but
I mean, not to, like, five or anything, but three, certainly.
But, for example, like, I think of... I don't remember much of hip-hop multiplication. I think after this episode is done, I'm going to search for it on YouTube and see if I can find something of it to post, you know, additionally to the blog, or, you know, link to.
Uh-huh.
But I can remember, I think, four lines from it.
All right. I think. Bless us with this.
Yes. I will bust those rhymes out. Okay.
Yeah, we'll see about that.
Yeah. No, I mean, I will bust them out to the fullest extent which they can be busted out. I'll admit that they have no flow and are terrible lines. That's not my fault in this case. Right. Unlike almost any other time I would be rapping, this is not my fault. Okay, let me think I remember. This one is from the fresh rap jam called The Multiples of Five. Let me think. And again, because this is funny, because they didn't even get that rapping is more speaking than singing. So it's kind of singing. What was it? It was the multiples of five are constant steps to take. You move up by five with every move you make. 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, and 40, 45. And then it stops there because, you know, it doesn't go up after 5 times 9.
I think that was more than 4 lines, first of all.
That's true.
What?
Yeah, like, I know.
I was a little bit of tautology there, too. Every time you go up by 5. Well, yeah, that's true of every number. I don't know.
Yeah.
In the 9s, it goes up by 9.
I feel like, nine, I'll give that 18, credit. 27. It's mostly helpful, less from what they're saying in any part that's not just the list of what they are.
Right.
That's solely helpful because when you're at that point as a kid, knowing your times tables is just pretty much dumb memorization.
Mm-hmm.
So the list is what's useful. It's a list with sort of a tune.
As an adult,
you know,
it's dumb,
I mean?
Memorization. Yeah. You just want to be able to compute it out.
Yeah.
You don't want to have to think
have
about
to
it.
Have to think.
Right.
But basically the idea is, it's, and the same thing with Schoolhouse Rock stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
After all the horrible tautological lyrics that don't help, again, that song goes, you know, 3, 6, 9, 12, you know. So basically the lists are helpful. And if the list has a melody behind it, then it's slightly easier to remember, I guess.
All right.
So,
anything else you'd like to add to tack it on to episode 17?
No, I think now that I've remembered hip-hop multiplication, I think we're done. There's nothing more to say.
There might be, but you're not going to be the man to say it?
No.
All right. Well, that has been episode 17 of I'm Trying to Think. Next week, we'll be back with episode
18.
Nice. You know your ones tables. That's good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, the ones tables was one of the... For starters, I don't think that is even multiplication. I think what we're doing right now is adding.
Adding
added 1 plus
like
17.
Multiplication.
That's actually...
How you get the multiplication tables, man. Add.
Now that I think about it, I think that was part of one of the lines of the intro
Before
song.
Before I remind
which explains
you of
what
any more
is.
Parts of hip-hop... Multiplication.
Multiplication.
Oh, man. Episode 18 will feature
repeating
the Chunky
addition.
Mary test.
That's
we'll
what they
probably,
said.
We'll probably talk about some other
repeating
things.
Repeating addition. Oh, God.
One thing we won't talk about is hip-hop multiplication.
Oh.
So, from those of us down here in lovely Pittsburgh, in our lovely Pittsburgh studios... I'm Chuck Werner. That's Dave Stern.
Hey, hi, I'm me.
And we will
providing
be
providing your fat rhymes and beats for all your multiplication times table memorizing
next week
memes.
With more I'm Trying to Think.